book genres are so 20th century. No, 19th century. They made sense when each book needed to be placed on a physical shelf so people could find similar titles. But what if you want to find a vampire romance, a post-apocalyptic comedy, a Western mystery where the main character is an android, a World War II adventure with magic, or a story based around a character of any race or religion or gender, set in any time or any place you choose? Scribble now brings searching for books into the 21st century, even if you're looking for one set in the 17th. Find the books you'll love by selecting the story elements that matter to you at scribble.com. You'll never look for books the same way again. Search by story elements, only at scribble.com. That's scribble.com.
KBS Publishing proudly presents Origin Scroll, Volume 1 of the Target Trilogy, written by Richard S. Tuttle, read by the author. This is a reading of The Origin Scroll, Volume 1 of the Target Trilogy, by Richard S. Tuttle. Chapter 4, Magician. Geneva wept. Her uncle Hazra had died during the night. He had pleaded with her yesterday to go after Alex and the villagers, but she had been stubborn. She had refused to leave her uncle to die alone. He had been too weak to travel, and she knew that if she left him alone in the cave, that he would die there. If she remained with him, she thought his condition would improve with rest. He must have known that he did not have much time left, but he was too weak to even argue with her. Poor Alex. He must have been confused when her friendship turned to rude dismissal, but she could not allow Alex time to agree with her uncle. Now she was alone. She would not be able to find River's Run on her own, and she couldn't hope to find Alex in the forest. The thought of roaming the forest alone looking for someone who could give her directions made her body shiver. She was afraid, she realized. She had never known fear before. Even trapped in the cave with the Yaki attacking, she had not known fear. Her uncle had been with her. Alex and the villagers had been with her. She had felt comforted and knew that everything would work out somehow. Not any longer. She should not have thought about the Yaki. That very thought brought the sounds of scurrying outside the cave to her ears. Even though she knew it was probably her imagination, she could not put the sounds out of her mind. She backed into the wall of the cave, and the stone was cold on her back. Another shiver ran through her body, and she couldn't be sure if she was shivering from the cold contact with the wall or the fear coursing through her body. What was it that Alex's father kept saying to him? Concentrate. Never doubt your abilities. What abilities? Her only ability had been to control her emotions. She laughed. Control her emotions? She couldn't even stop shivering. Concentrate on what you can affect. Dismiss that which you can't. That had been her secret that she had shared with Alex. He had been impressed. She wondered how impressed he would be if he could see her now. Geneva jumped. Had she seen movement outside the cave opening? The sounds were still there. Was she losing her mind? She backed farther into the cave. The Yaki were coming for her. She knew it. She backed into the deepest corner of the cave, and with a feeling of disorientation, passed through the stone. Geneva's world went black, and she sat down and cried herself asleep. Geneva awoke in the darkness. Her skin was taut from her eyes to her jaw, where her tears had dried. She wasn't sure how long she had slept, or even if she was now awake. She felt awake and composed, but her surroundings were different enough to cause a great deal of doubt. She remembered losing control after discovering that Hazra had died. The last thing she remembered was the feeling of having passed through the stone of the cave. She knew this must be her mind playing tricks on her, but then where was she? She could feel the stone wall on both sides of her. She seemed to be in a tunnel and could go either way. But which way should she go? It was unsettling to be unable to see. Slowly, she rose to a standing position, careful not to strike her head. She placed her right hand on the wall and stretched her left out in front of her and started walking slowly. The tunnel was long. After about a half hour, she switched hands. The tunnel twisted and turned every which way, but she had the distinct impression of constantly going downward. She switched hands several times more before she realized that had she been consistent with which wall she had been following, she would have been able to retrace her steps. It wouldn't matter now. There was no way going back. She was sure that she had gone through several intersections in the last several hours. Geneva sat down to rest. She reached into the pouch at her waist and scooped out some berries. She ate them slowly, savoring each one. She must conserve them. She was thankful that she had gone out yesterday and picked the berries. The villagers had left some smoked beef and dried biscuits for her and Hazra, but she had wanted something fresh and went out and picked the berries. She contemplated the tunnels that she had been meandering in. They were obviously man-made and quite extensive. She didn't think she was going in circles because the slope always appeared to be going downward. She was puzzled as to how she had entered the tunnels. She was sure that she was not sleeping now, and she didn't think she was insane, but she could not explain her entrance into the tunnels. Had there been a narrow opening into the cave, there would have been some light when she woke up, even if it was night out. She had seen nothing. Time to move on. For several more hours, Geneva groped along in the darkness, always going down a barely perceptible slope. She stopped and rested several more times. If these tunnels are man-made, she thought, sooner or later there will be an exit, and maybe someone who can direct her. The slope stopped, and the walls were curved. She could hear the echo of her footsteps, which indicated to her that she was in a large chamber. She inched along the wall until it abruptly turned. She bent down and laid a berry on the ground, and then went past the turn in the wall. The wall started again, and she began to think her impression was correct. She felt from the curve in the wall that she was in a round chamber. If this were true, it would be the first significant landmark on her mental map. She continued around the room, checking for the berry at each intersection. She finally found it on the 8th intersection. Geneva sat down and ate the berry. She needed a plan. If these tunnels were extensive, she could be lost for days. She couldn't survive on a pouch full of berries forever, and she had no indication of any miners in the tunnels. She needed a clue as to which of the 7 remaining tunnels to explore. Perhaps there was one that was more worn than the others. She felt the floor of the tunnel that she was at. Nothing remarkable here. She crawled to the next tunnel. Nothing here either. But the tunnel appeared to incline upward. She continued until she had made the complete circle. There was no way she could determine which path was the most used. 5 of the tunnels slanted upward, including the one she had come down. 3 of them appeared to stay level. 2 of the level paths were directly opposite each other. She decided to try the remaining level path. This tunnel was fairly straight and level, but had numerous intersections. After half an hour, she detected light down one of the cross tunnels. The excitement of a possible escape sent energy coursing through her body. She could move faster now as she was able to see, but she kept her pace slow anyway. The tunnel made a right turn and ended in the solid wall. The wall was aglow. She reached out and touched the wall, and her hand seemed to go through it. Hesitantly, she slowly walked through the wall and found herself in an extremely large cavern that was brightly lit. The light seemed to emanate from the ceiling, although she saw no torches of any kind. Geneva walked towards the center of the cavern. The ground looked similar to the floor of the cave she had left Uncle Hazra in, but it felt different. It felt spongy. She saw a man sitting cross-legged on the ground, with his back towards her. She called out to him, "Hello?" The man spun around and raised his hands towards her. Instantly, Geneva found herself in a giant birdcage. The man rose, his long, brilliantly patterned robe flowing around him. Geneva could see his long gray beard swinging in step with his approach. She thought she should be afraid of this man, but she was not. She remained silent. "Who dares to enter my chambers unbidden?" he demanded in a voice that reverberated off the walls. "I am Geneva," she answered, "and I apologize for disturbing you, but I am lost." "Lost?" roared the man. "You expect me to believe that you just happen to wander in here? Do not trifle with me, woman, if that is what you are. Who is this Geneva, and why do you suspect that I would recognize the name?" "I am a woman," snapped Geneva. "Even your old eyes should be able to see that. I do not expect you to know me, and I don't really care to know you. What I want is for you to remove this fool cage and direct me to the exit so I may be on my way." "Oh, certainly, Your Majesty," mocked the man. "I'll remove my barrier so you may attack me. Stop playing me for the fool. I will never release the barrier until you have satisfied me." "Well," quipped Geneva, "then you had better throw some food in here, because these berries won't last forever. If I die, it is going to smell pretty bad in your holy chambers." The man's eyes twinkled as he watched the girl sitting there eating a berry. "Tell me your story, and how you came to my chambers." Geneva told the man about traveling with her Uncle Hazra, the appearance of the villagers, the attack of the Yaki, and the death of her uncle. He sat there looking quite bored, as if listening to a merchant selling water as a miracle cure. When she told him of her uncharacteristic bout of fear and backing into the cave wall and ending up in darkness, his interest heightened. He walked over to the cage and examined her closely. She continued her story, but he held up his hand and walked away. He returned a moment later and handed her a damp cloth. "Wipe your face," he instructed. Geneva wiped the tear stains off her face and returned the cloth. "Thank you," she said. He indicated that she should continue, so she told him of the many hours of traveling the dark passages, complete with her feelings and thoughts as best she could remember them. She explained her logic at the circle room and told how she had seen the light and the glowing wall and walked through it. "This Hazra," he asked, "did he have another name?" "His formal name was Hazra Roth," she replied.
"And is Roth your name, too?"
"I don't know. I have always been called just Geneva. I did not know my parents or Hazra's relationship to them, but he loved me as his own and cared for me. We were traveling to River's Run, where my cousin Dawn lives, but Uncle Hazra did say that she was sort of a cousin."
"You may call me Egum," stated the old man as he raised his hands. "Please make yourself comfortable." The cage disappeared. "And forgive my method of introduction, but I have enemies who mean me harm, and are very talented in their ability to deceive. You may wander as you will. You will find food, accommodations, and facilities. You will be treated as my guest. If you will excuse me for a while, I have some research to do."
Geneva watched the man walk away, and then wandered around the cave. It had a very airy feel to it, fresh, not like the dank passages she had roamed for hours. The cavern was huge, filled with tables, bookshelves, and furniture. She had never seen so many books before. Uncle Hazra used to boast that his book collection was second in the region, only to the barons. With amazement, Geneva realized that Uncle Hazra's entire collection would not fill even one shelf of Egum's library, and Egum had many, many shelves. The tables were covered with beakers and flasks. Shelves with glass jars and tins were tiered around the cave. There was also a wide variety of objects that were foreign to her, spheres of various sizes and composition, as well as rectangular objects of different colors that appeared solid and without lids. Most unique was an arrangement of four door frames that were arranged in a square. but with enough room to walk around each door. There were no doors in the frames, and it looked like a giant ivy garden before the ivy was planted. Walking around, she realized that the cavern had been much larger than she had thought. It took her over 10 minutes to walk from one side to the other. She discovered a large pool of water on the floor and stopped to view her reflection. She looked terrible. Her long golden hair was knotted and dirty. Her face was still smudged, although the tear stains were gone. She looked down at her dress and wondered how Egon could have refrained from laughing at her condition. Geneva didn't think she could appear dirtier if she lay in the road and rolled over and over. Geneva looked around for Egon, but he was nowhere in sight. She quickly stepped out of her dress and dipped it in the water. The pool of the water was much deeper than it appeared. She reached her hand down as far as she could reach and could not touch the bottom. Timidly, she placed her foot in the water and was rewarded with the feel of a firm bottom. She placed her other foot further into the pool and found that it sloped downward towards the center. She walked in until she was waist deep. The water was cold, but it felt refreshing to Geneva. She ducked her head under the water quickly and got her hair wet. The water tasted fresh and Geneva longed for a bath. She looked around again for Egon and was startled to see a long purple robe, comb, towel, and slippers laid out where she had dropped her dress. Geneva removed her sandals and the rest of her clothes and happily submerged herself. Geneva was wrapped in the purple robe and was combing her hair. Her clothes were stretched out over the stone floor to dry. The refreshing bath had buoyed her spirits. Egon approached with a silver tray loaded with fresh fruit, cheese, and bread. He sat facing Geneva and asked, "I trust you are refreshed? Eat. Those berries make for a terrible diet." "Thank you, sir," she replied. "I am indebted for your gracious hospitality." Egon waved his hand as if to dismiss the need for gratitude. "You mentioned that your Uncle Hazret died while taking you to this dawn, who is not really your cousin. Have you no other family, even distant relatives?" "If I do, Uncle was not aware of them," stated Geneva. "When my uncle realized that he was not well enough to take care of me, he pondered for several days on where to take me. He never spoke of my parents. In truth, I believe that he did not know them, much less was he related to them. Several times I broached the subject of our association, but he would not speak of its origin, as if afraid to. No, I fear that Rivers Run is the only destination that I can plead. Do you know how to get there?" Egon ignored the question. "Have you ever met this Dawn?" he asked. "Is she aware that you are coming?" "I do not recall ever having met Dawn," she replied hesitantly. "Why is it important for you to know if she was expecting me?" "You are cautious," remarked Egon. "That is as it should be. If Dawn is expecting you and you fail to show up, she should alert the authorities. If the authorities were to find you in my company while I was helping you to Rivers Run, they might assume me a kidnapper. If you were to decide not to continue on to Rivers Run, I could still be the subject of scrutiny. If, however, you were not expected, she would not alert the authorities, and they would not be looking for you." "Are you a wanted man?" she asked. "Do you fear the authorities discovering your hideout?" "I am not wanted by the authorities," he declared. "I do have enemies, but I do not fear them. I respect them. I respect them enough to realize that any inquiries, however small, would not escape their scrutiny. I am not yet ready to meet them. I will choose the time and place for the confrontation, not them, not fate, not you. You walk into my home and fear me for a kidnapper. Is this rational?" "I am sorry, Egon. I do not mean to spurn your hospitality, nor do I wish to bring trouble upon you. If you could just give me directions to Rivers Run, I will be on my way and never mention our meeting." "And what will you do in Rivers Run? Do you have an occupation to pursue? Have you thought about what tasks will fill your years?" asked Egon. "No," Geneva answered. "I have no plans. I like to read, though. Books are filled with knowledge and adventure." She looked around the cavern at Egon's volumes of words.
Egum caught the twinkle in Geneva's blue eyes as she surveyed his library. "Very well, then," he said. "Perhaps you will be my guest for a few days while you rest up for your long journey, and then I'll point the way to River's Run." Geneva was overwhelmed by the selection of reading material. She found whole sections of the library devoted to history, mathematics, medicine, art, and geography. His sections on literature had to be better than the Baron's. But the most extensive sections were on magic, science, religion, and folklore. Uncle Hazra had always said there was no such thing as magic, that every event had a logical explanation. Still, Geneva could not think of any explanations for her entrance into the tunnels or the glowing wall that she walked through. And she was sure that the birdcage Egum had used on her would defy logic. She had seen little of the old gray-haired man in the last several days, but when they did meet, he was always cheerful and considerate. He kept an ample supply of fresh food available and didn't seem to care how much Geneva ate. He was never hurried or irritable and would always answer Geneva's questions. She was free to roam wherever she wished, whenever she wanted to. Geneva began to dwell on the old man's questions. What did she hope to accomplish with her life? What type of occupation would she be good at? Would anyone care if she never showed up at River's Run? She knew that Uncle Hazra had not sent a letter to Dawn because he had mentioned that fact. She didn't tell Egum because she did not fully trust him. Why can't she just stay here and devour his books? Perhaps he will let her work around the cave in return for her staying. She could promise not to get in the way. She trusted him now. He asked her daily if she was ready to leave. Maybe he wanted her to leave. Perhaps he enjoyed his solitude. Egum disrupted her thoughts. "Won't your cousin be worried?" he asked. "You have dallied for a month now, and she must be very worried." Could it really have been a month, she thought? It had only seemed like a few days. "Egum," she said, "I am sorry. I didn't realize that I had been here that long. I have been an imposition on you. Perhaps I can repay you by performing some chores. You have extended every courtesy to me, and I feel that I must repay you in some fashion." Egum laughed. "You seek a way to prolong your departure. You are clever, but are you talented?" "What do you mean?" she stammered. "What do you know about magic?" he asked. "I do not believe magic exists," stated Geneva. "All things have a logical explanation." "Logical," deliberated Egum. "Yes, that is true. But it is also true that magic is logical. It takes a very perceptive person to tap the logic of magic. People say that a person has magical talent, but it is really the ability to perceive forces that others mislabel as illogical or non-existent. Of course, talent is not enough. A good magician must also study and experiment. She must devote her life to bettering her skills." The use of the female gender in Egum's statements was not lost on Geneva. This man was a magician, and he was offering her an apprenticeship, maybe. And if this person did possess the ability and agreed to devote her life to study, would she be bound to her instructor? "To be bound to an instructor is an illogical thought," stated Egum. "One is privileged to serve a master, but it is the master who is obligated to the student. The best master will not stop teaching until the student is better than the master. That is a serious obligation, don't you agree?" "What if the student does not have the ability?" asked Geneva. "Instruction ends and the student is dismissed," answered Egum. "Do you doubt your abilities, Geneva? Why do you think I was so disturbed with your arrival? Only magical talent could have entered my realm. The entrance to the old tunnels from the cave where you left your uncle have remained unmolested for hundreds of years, yet you passed through. Your entrance to this cavern through a solid stone wall is evidence of your abilities. A non-perceptive individual would have been unable to even detect the light through the wall. Your ability to perform these feats without the knowledge that you were performing magic indicates an ability of greatness that I have trouble comprehending. That is why I tried to determine your heritage. A person of such great abilities does not just happen. Whoever your parents were, they were magicians of great power. Perhaps someday we may discover their identity, but today we must start learning. Come with me. Egum led Geneva to one of the large tables. On the table was a small block of stone atop some parchments. Egum removed the stone and took one parchment and placed it in front of Geneva. This is a fairly simple feat, and one that I know you will be able to accomplish. You are going to move this parchment across the table. You will have trouble at first because you do not know how to control the power. You must will the parchment to move. It may help to have a reason for your desire to see it moved. Geneva stared at the parchment. Mentally, she wished the paper would move, but it did not. She demanded that the paper move, but it refused. It would be easier, she thought, to just bend down and blow the paper across the table. Concentrate, pleaded Egum. Concentrate. Never doubt your abilities. The parchment will move because I will it to move, she thought. She concentrated. Slowly, the parchment started sliding across the table. Very good start, congratulated Egum. Now let's try something of greater substance. Egum took the stone and placed it in front of Geneva. That was a trick, right? Questioned Geneva. You probably moved the paper and let me think I was doing it? Egum smiled and shook his head. Do not doubt your abilities because you did not know they existed. Try the stone. Geneva willed the stone to move as she had with the parchment, but the rock only vibrated. She tried harder. Her head started to ache, and still the rock remained. The pain distracted her mind. Concentrate, said Egum. Your desire to be a magician must be proved. Concentrate. Never doubt your abilities. The pain increased. She wanted to stop, but she must not fail. Your desire for fame depends on this rock, said Egum. She felt like her eyeballs would pop out of her head, but she kept trying. Fortune awaits the verification of your abilities, stated Egum. The pain was intense. Her vision blurred and the stone merged with the table. She was getting dizzy. She could not keep this up. She would pass out. Azra's soul is being crushed by the rock, shouted Egum. Suddenly, the rock flew across the table and smashed into the wall, disintegrating into thousands of dust particles. Geneva fainted. Geneva awoke in her bed. She still had a headache, but the intensity was greatly diminished. She was aware that she had succeeded in moving the stone, but she was concerned about the pain caused by the effort. Moments later, Egum arrived with a tray of cheese and a pot of tea. Egum removed a tin from his robe and tapped a small amount of white powder into the tea. Drink this, he commanded. What is it? Asked Geneva hesitantly. What do you care? Asked Egum. I am your master, and until you become the master, never doubt my intentions. Your trust in me must be unconditional. Geneva drank the tea and ate a small piece of cheese. Good, said Egum. It was a mixture of antler and metal. It has an amazing effect on stress headaches. You did well today, Geneva. You have verified my conclusions regarding your abilities. I have never had a student that could move the rock on their first attempt. You also showed your intentions for your powers, and this is good. Many seek the power for their own glorification, but for you, helping others is more powerful motivation. I couldn't be more pleased. I have laid out a course of instruction for you. At first, it will consist more of reading than experimentation. You must develop a knowledge base that will give you reference into the origin of powers. The knowledge will come from a variety of sources. I'm sure you notice the breadth of my library. It is not because I like to collect books. Each of those volumes contains information pertinent to magic. There is also the need to learn about potions and elixirs. Geneva's headache was gone. She reviewed his outline for training and noticed that there was no reference to time anywhere in the document. Egum explained that the training would proceed at whatever rate she was capable of learning. Geneva was excited and read volume after volume. Time had no meaning down here in the cave. She noted that, however Egum had arranged the lighting for the cavern,
He had compensated for day and night. At times the overhead light was very bright, and at other times it was very dim. Geneva suspected that whatever spell he used, he had crafted it to coincide with life on the surface. There were things that she missed on the surface, the feel of sunlight on her face, the sight of the moon, the smell of green grass, the sound of wildlife. She missed them all. She would have to ask Egum for a trip to the surface. Perhaps she would wait. As much as she desired a touch of reality, she loved reading his books. The experiments were also going well, and a trip to the surface would halt them. For the past week, they had been working on mind speech. It fascinated Geneva that two individuals could communicate without an utterance. He could even read her thoughts without her sending them. Soon she would learn that technique as well. "So," uttered Egum, "you desire the real world, do you?"
"Egum, that's unfair. You're eavesdropping again."
"You're just jealous," laughed Egum. "Perhaps you will master it soon. Come, I have been saving a surprise for you." Egum led her to the pool of water and went into an incantation. Suddenly the cave walls disappeared, and they were outdoors. Geneva was disoriented. He hadn't transported them anywhere because everything that existed in the cave was still there. She looked around. The pool was actually a pond. The cave floor was grass. There were trees behind the bookshelves. They appeared to be in a small valley completely encircled by towering peaks. The peaks even had snow on them. Her bed was in a little alcove on the edge of the valley.
"Which is real?" he asked.
"This is real," answered Geneva.
"How do you know?" queried Egum.
"It's logical," she replied. "I should have realized it a long time ago. That first day when I arrived, the cave floor was spongy, like grass. The pool had a dirt bottom, like a pond. The light was set up for day and night, but that's because it was day and night. This is a magnificent illusion, Egum. But why live in a cave when you have such beauty here?"
"The illusion is two-way," answered Egum. "When you see the cave ceiling, those above us see another peak. Unfortunately, Geneva, I still have enemies, and I am not ready for them."
"Tell me of them, Egum."
"It is dangerous for you to know too much too soon. Today we are dealing with mind speech. My enemies possess these powers as well. So far I can block them. In the future, who knows? You, however, have not yet mastered mind speech. You could be easy prey for the likes of Sarek."
"Who is Sarek?" prodded Geneva.
"This is important, Geneva," cautioned Egum. "I have already said too much. But I will ease your curiosity a little further. You must always be conscious of never mentioning his name in mind speech. If his name has to be mentioned at all, do so verbally. Now, Sarek was a student of mine some time ago. He was very talented, but unlike yourself, he wanted to learn for selfish reasons. He learned quickly and mastered all that I could teach in a mere 7 years. He kept his association with me because of my vast library. I have always guarded my library with a ward that I have shared with no one. Magic, as with all of life, has two faces, the light and the dark. The light side of magic is just as powerful as the dark, but it is not destructive in nature. That is not to say that you can't destroy things with light side. You did that the first day when you smashed that rock into the cave wall. The rock was reduced to dust. That is destructive." Egum sat by the pond and continued, "The dark side of magic is devoted to destruction. My library contains a wealth of information on the dark side as well as the light side. I have never had an interest in the dark side, but Sarek did. As I had fulfilled my obligation as master, I terminated our relationship. I did this for his own good as well as the good of all. Sarek swore he would defeat me and gain my library. He tried, but while he knew all that I knew, he was not yet as strong as I was."
"How long ago was this?"
"It is over 30 years now," replied Egum. 30 years, and he has been honing his skills to defeat me."
"Several times," she asked, "you have said that you were not yet ready for your enemies. If he knows all that you know, how can you ever be ready?"
"I have started studying the dark side," he answered. It is not what I wish to spend my time studying, but I have no choice. I must prepare to defeat Sarek, or he will defeat me.
You mentioned enemies as in plural, queried Geneva. Who are the others?
I am not sure of the others. Shortly after Sarek left, I took on another promising student, Kirsta. She also was very gifted. You must understand that I am not obligated to accept a student. I do so only for those judged exceptional. Anyway, Kirsta was pure of heart, as you are. She also learned what I could teach in 7 years, and left to go out on her own. I liked Kirsta very much, and we kept in touch for a while. One day, while she was visiting me, I found her browsing references on the dark side. I tried to probe her mind, but she caught me at it and protected herself. We have not spoken since.
Just because she was looking up something on the dark side, you have canceled her friendship? Asked Geneva.
No, not for using the library. During the mind probe, I picked up two items that disturbed me. She had Sarek on her mind. I believe that Sarek was using her to get the information he needed. Kirsta must have been in love with Sarek, or I am sure that she would never have helped him. I still care for her very much, but I cannot afford to open myself to her.
You mentioned two things in the mind probe, but only mentioned Sarek. What is the other thing you discovered?
The Origin Scroll, sighed Egum. The Origin Scroll is a lost historical tome that purportedly has spells and incantations that are so powerful that they can create and destroy universes. No one has ever seen it, but there are references to it in the earliest volumes of both magic and religious orders. That book in Sarek's hands would have the worst consequences for all of mankind.
Are you going to have to destroy Kirsta as well?
I don't know. I hope not. Sarek is evil, but I think Kirsta is not. I think she fell in love with him, and often love will blind you to reality. The problem is not limited to Sarek, though. Sarek has become a master in his own right. He also takes in students, and I believe Sarek would try to control his students. He once joked about creating a spell that would bind the caster to its creator. He is the type of master to create such a spell and teach it to his students. When they learn the spell and cast it, they would be eternally bound to Sarek, his to control. And if his students became masters and taught this spell to their students, well, you can see where this leads.
Is there anything that I can do to help? Asked Geneva.
If it is your desire to help, replied Egum, you will. I am obligated as your master to teach you all that I know. I have been studying the dark side for 20 years now. You are not obligated to learn all that I know. I am obligated to teach all that I know. The decision will be yours when the time comes. Know this, though. If Sarek has his way, I will never finish tutoring you. He will see me dead before then. I have spoken of the ward which protects my library. If ever I should die, know that I will leave a clue for you to gain access to my library. You will need to find the clue, cancel the ward, and place your own ward of protection on the books. The library will be yours, and so will the obligation to safeguard it.
This has been a reading from The Origin Scroll by Richard S. Tuttle. Thank you for listening. I hope you have enjoyed the journey. Origin Scroll is the first volume of the Targa Trilogy, and the cornerstone of the epic fantasy Alcea collection, which spans 16 volumes in 3 series. Origin Scroll and the other volumes of the Alcea collection are available in print and ebook formats. For information about these novels, or the author, Richard S. Tuttle, please visit rstuttle.com. Special thanks to Kevin MacLeod for the use of his music. Vortex and Sky Coelan, as well as many of Kevin's other great works, can be found at incompetech.com. Comments and suggestions are always welcome. Email for the author can be sent to richard@rstuttle.com. Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed the stay.